Access number 29065, Mr. Michael White, Real 7. Now, what about your training then, both for, as on mortars and of course for you as a Tara?
Yeah. Well, as I stated, we had to do this intelligence test, and I suppose perhaps a little bit more intelligent perhaps than some of them, perhaps mathematically, that kind of I was then designated to be a Tara, which meant Technical Assistant Royal Artillery, which when I first joined the Royal Artillery as training, I declined that job because it actually meant kind of plotting of targets and putting all the guns online and lining the guns up and all things like that. And so what happened then, there was two or three of us who was kind of similarly kind of going to be Taras. Now some actually, they had to split us up, so one or two of them actually went back to Singapore and went on a Tara course there, and I and I think a couple of others, we went on this Tara course with the 5.8 medium regiments, which were the big 5.5 guns, which were also based in gun club barracks. And so we had then had this ongoing instruction with this sergeant instructor who was I suppose a Tara such in a 5.8 medium regiment. And so what the actual the instruction meant that kind of we had this what they call an artillery ball. We had this kind of this tripod and on with this flat board which used to screw on top of the tripod, and then we had this big blank white map with all these grid squares, and these grid squares which would line up with the maps on the Ordnance Survey maps as such, and then all round the actual the board itself would be the full 360 degrees. And so that kind of when you actually the actual idea was when the actual what we call the pivot gun, the number one gun, we had like four guns as such, so the pivot gun would be the map reference of where that gun would be. We would then put that map reference actually on this artillery board, and then we'd then have an OP, and he would then kind of give a map reference of where kind of this gun would fire to as a ranging shot. And so we then had to, when that round landed, we then had that map reference given to us. So we then had to plot that onto our artillery board. And then onto this kind of this pivot gun plot, we had this long metal arm, and it was graduated into a range in kind of, I think it was 25 yards and things like that. So we then kind of went to where the round landed, the map reference, and from the pivot gun, it then gave to the so many degrees, like 270 degrees, 10 degrees, or 50 degrees, and things like that. And also, it would then give you the range of where from the pivot gun to the actual target.
And how now, you understand it now, so I presume you understood it even better then. I mean, you didn't take long to grasp this.
No, it was because you had to be kind of like, because we're all talking about bearings and back bearings, and I think kind of this is where the thing like logarithms came in, where kind of with the mortars we used to like what we call a four figure map reference, which is kind of 1, 2, 3, 4, which went across, and 4, 5, 6, 7, which would go downwards. But also, with the using logarithms, you could work it out. You could get a 14-figure map reference, which was pretty useless to us, really, as with mortars. Now, the other part of the Tara training was we had what we call a director, which is also, once again, it is a tripod, and it's very similar to where you see these things when you see on the building sites now, where kind of the surveyors actually surveying, where they have these poles and they put the bearings and things like that. So what we actually did then, we used to have these either kind of either a pole there or a side of a building. We used to put line this the director up, because it was all done with bearings, and then we then had to kind of then go to the gun. We used to aim at the visually aim at the gun, the sight actually on the mortar, the gun, and then kind of we'd then give a bearing to him, such as we used to yell out kind of number one gun, something 0 left, 1, 2 degrees, 40 minutes, and then he would then look at his site and go back to us, and then he would repeat it back. And so, and then you go to number 2 gun, and then to number 3 gun, and then to number 4 gun, when we had 4 guns, and that was it. So basically, that was it. Now, when the actual training, our Tara training actually finished, and all the train, and these people came back from Singapore, and then those people who had actually been trained actually on the guns, and also the signalers, because it was a different system to the ACAC signaling, to the field signaling. And so when in theory, we had to put all our theories together, and I do remember kind of one crazy...
Hang on now, before we go on, you've missed one thing. You had a demonstration of mortars before you went on the course, from 120 mortar battery.
Oh, yeah.
That was at Lyman, on the island.
Yeah.
What do you remember of that? Just fill that in before we go on too far.
Well, because at that time, I'd never seen a mortar before, although I'd actually been in the cadets. And so, to me, a mortar was an infantry weapon as such, but these were the big 4.2 mortars, what they call the heavy mortars. The infantry used to have 3-inch mortars and 2-inch mortars and that. So what they did, they took us by truck to the Lai Moon, which is kind of like on the nearest point between Kowloon and Hong Kong Island. And this is where the 120 mortar battery were actually based, which I did not at that time realise it was still part of our 34th Light Attack Regiment. And so we then had a demonstration of these mortars, how these mortars came into operation, and they were pulled by like a 1500 weight, and then they came into action, and they put them online, and the Taras put them on online, and so they went more or less actually into action. And so this, and I suppose like all of us really, that was the first time we'd ever seen a mortar.
What did you think of them as a weapon at that early stage? Was it an impressive demonstration?
Well, I got no great feelings at all, because I was just a little Bakshi National Serviceman, although kind of like, I suppose my standing went up because I was now become a Tara. Now, a Tara as such, kind of, as I remember training, this is where all the grammar school boys and the public school boys were all diverted to Oswestry as such.
Now, what happened then, when you'd had your training as a Tara, you then went to the first live round firing? I think that was at Port Elder? In the new territory. Tell us about your first fire live experience as a Tara.
Well, one of the things that's always stuck in my mind, perhaps with a smile on my face, that kind of when all our kind of training was put together, we went on kind of a deployment, and I remember kind of our gun as such, or our troop, we received orders to go to a such and such map reference. And whether or not our officer got the wrong map reference, and we deployed these about 3 or 4 guns actually in one of the major streets of Kowloon, and which caused much amusement amongst us for thing, and I suppose it was tremendous embarrassment for the officer.
And just a complete mistake.
It was a mistaken map reference.
And what about when you did do your first live firing?
Now, our first firing of the mortars, we went once again to kind of these firing ranges. I'm sure it was Port Shelter, and what I actually remember, which was actually on the coast, because Hong Kong or the New Territories was all dotted with the little islands, and there was this small island there, and of course there used to be lots and lots of these little sandpans and junks floating around and things like that, and so they had to ban all these kind of this shipping around this island. And I remember we put these guns, actually lined them all up, and they gave us kind of like a map reference for this island. And of course, as a Tara, you actually plotted it. But it was one of those unpleasant days in Hong Kong when it started raining. And of course, when they fired the first round, if I remember rightly, the actual mortar, it actually tipped off its tripod and that. And which caused more embarrassment, because we were only trainees as such. And then I believe either the second or third round, I remember it was the first misfire, because we we'd never been used to kind of misfires, on, especially with mortars. And I do remember the misfire actually on the Beaufort, where they used to go pull it out and used to catch it and go so many paces. But the same thing applied then. With an actual mortar, when it, this bomb goes down, and of course then suddenly there's this quietness, and you could see people actually edging away from the gun sort of thing, because they didn't know what's likely to happen. But the actual training is, they disconnect the barrel from the actual, the tripod of it, and then they tip it up, and then some person has to catch it, because the actual, the mortar bomb for 4.2, it's quite a heavy bomb. And the theory is he then has to kind of walk gently to so many yards away from the gun position and kind of gently place it on the floor sort of thing, and things like that. But that's my brief memories of that time when we were actually training. But we then went training once, two or three times afterwards, and we became very proficient of it in this island. We could pinpoint the parts of the island.
Now, anything else about? I mean, what was your job there? I mean, you were acting as Tara. Was there much for the Tara to do in these firing exercises, or was it mainly just setting them on the original line?
No, because. In battle as such, I mean, targets are here, there and everywhere sort of thing. And so what actually happens when you put the gun online, and they start off with a ranging shot. So he puts the first bomb in, and maybe because it's it never falls actually right on target. So it's either over or to the left or to the right and things like that. So you then get kind of these orders coming back by radio or telephone, depending where you are, and it comes back and it says up 50, left 25, and you keep doing this until you get. So the Tara then, on his artillery board, he has this plastic, what they call a template, which is kind of like all squares scratched out in 25 yards, and so the Tara would then move up 50 and then to the left 50, and then you then give another range of 0 left 1-2 degrees, and then the oboe tear, which means that it means from the OP to the target. This is another bearing of say like 1-2 degrees and things like that. And so this would then, these keep altering until the OP officer is quite happy that you're now actually on target. And when you're actually on target, all four guns fire. They then give the order then kind of say five rounds gunfire. Or kind of what's the other one where they just put it in and they just bang the top down and all guns fire together.
Now
this is during the training period.
You were getting much more efficient than you is what. You're
oh
saying.
Yes,
you were hitting this island.
We actually became quite efficient. Did we kind of fire on the mortars at that time?
Now, also
on top of that, other than kind of training on the mortars, it was kind of decided that kind of say. In action as such, if say like a shell's coming over from the enemy as such, if the actual driver is killed, there's no way you can actually get the guns out. So it was decided everyone would have driving training. And so what happened then, all the different sergeants or kind of anyone who with driving instruction would take everyone out, and you go about three or four in a lorry, and then you go different parts of the driving around the new territories and that, just chopping and changing. Well, at that time, because I actually could drive, I had no problems at all.
Were you doing training or were you being trained?
This was training for everyone learning to drive.
Or
getting the basics of the actual idea was to be able to start the vehicle up and get the gun out.
I understand that, but were you doing training? Were you training other people to drive because you already?
I was a Tara. You see, people were split up.
You could already drive.
Yeah, I could drive, but I was not a driver. I was not a driver. I was then retrained as a Tara. People were retrained as signalers. People were retrained on the guns. And I suppose they perhaps had many and drivers as such.
Now, anything else about the preparations? I mean, you got a new kit, didn't you? What new uniform? What was that about?
Well, before, whilst we were there, we then had a visit because the troop ships were coming back from Korea. Different people were coming back from either their time had expired or kind of through ailments and what have you. And I do remember we was all, our troop got together and we had a visit from a gunner sergeant major who was coming back from Korea, and he was telling about the experiences and things like that. And of course, one of the things no one ever realised, because we were in the warmth of Hong Kong and he was coming back and he was talking about the bitter cold of Korea sort of thing, and he had advised us, everyone, to, if possible, to get some sort of like a plastic, or I think they were called Bakelite in those days, razors, because the problem there was kind of like if you try to shave your face, the kind of the water was freezing, and it was giving kind of little hints about kind of what to do. And so we did have some idea what was happening. Now, we also used to receive what we call the Gunner magazine. It was like a magazine which is printed to in Britain sort of thing, and every goes to all the different units, and you paid like, I think, threepence or sixpence for it and things like that. So you got some idea what was happening in Korea and things like that.
What about Kitty now? You got new battle dress, didn't you?
Now, because of kind of like the expected cold, now we'd been used to kind of wearing shorts and hose tops and putties and sleeves rolled up and that. So, and also we had bush hats. We sometimes used to wear the blueberry for parades. And so we was going to Korea then, and so we was then issued with the new, what we call the green webbing. Now, this was the different webbing which we had where I used to blanco it, you know, with all the brass bits and pieces. And it was kind of like a green web, it was a green belt. And also there were different pouches, because we was also had pouches. And also we had a different small pack, which was green, but we still kept the old, what I call the old blanco type big kit bag. And then we was issued with what they call a C kit bag. We had the normal big cap with all our clothes and stuff went in it. Then we had a C kit bag which had blankets in and things like that. The idea really was, I suppose, actually on the boat and then a blankets afterwards. And then we was then issued with, we then reissued with our old B battle dress. This is the old itchy khaki battle dress which we had when we was training, because and that. And this was the clothing which we actually went to Korea with.
Now, before you went, though, in July, there were warnings of typhoons. Can you tell us about that? Because that seems quite...
Yeah, now, with Hong Kong, this is in the kind of like the typhoons when they kind of they came up from the, I suppose, the China Sea. And some it depended which direction they went. Sometime they went to Taiwan, to Hong Kong's, and especially to the Philippines and places like that. Now, I was there kind of, I think it was about the July period of 1951, and they used to have, near the Star Ferry, they used to have on this big kind of hill, they used to have this mast, and it used to have all these different, used to hoist these like triangles, and all different shapes, which meant which was the force of the winds or the typhoons coming and things like that. But in Gong Kong Barracks, when it came to July at that time, for the first time ever, they decided it was going to be a very severe typhoon was heading towards Hong Kong. And so within our barracks, for the very first time, we was confined into our barrack rooms, and they even took food in there. And all the vehicles, they all had to have their canvas tops removed. And all the, I think the guns and that were actually tied down and things like that to happen. But... it was exciting for us because we was kind of allocated to our rooms, and we just didn't do any praise or anything like that. But fortunately, the actual typhoon, I think it diverted, and I think it went towards the Philippines, and it caused tremendous damage there and that.
Now, you seem to have had a battery party before you left.
Yes, that was amazing, really. We had a battery party, and the 42 battery decided to spend some of its funds. I mean, I didn't realise this, you know, kind of these batteries had all this monies, you know, floating around. And they decided that we could go to a place called Silvermine Bay, which is an island, which I think it's just slightly to the west of the Kowloon. And we went on one boat, I can't remember how, but it was all servicemen, but we were allowed to wear civilian clothes, because whilst we were actually in Hong Kong, we were allowed, when we go out in the evening, rather than wear kind of an army uniform as such, you could actually go and purchase from the Chinese, you could actually purchase a light pair of trousers and perhaps a white shirt. So basically, this is what we, also a pair of shoes as such, because at that time all we had was just army boots. So we all went to the Silver Mine Bay and things like that. And so we then had swimming, because we used to have a swimming costume and that. And so we could go swimming into the sea. And then they always remember they had this big fish and chip lunch and things like that. And I was just amazed that the army could be so generous to their common soldiers as such.
You also had a local leave on Hang Kai Island.
Yeah, but being in the army, the only leave as such I had was kind of like my embarkation leave, which was in the Christmas period of 1950 before I went abroad. And I think I had 14 days leave as such, which I suppose I was due, but it was also my embarkation leave. And so really that was the only leave I actually had in England, apart from a couple of these 48-hour passes, which were hopeless trying to get from Rio to Kettering. And so in Hong Kong, my period came up where I was due to a few days leave. And so on Hong Kong Island, as I remember, they had this kind of this Cheerio Club where there was accommodation as well as kind of foods and things like that. So we then had so many days leave there. And I remember the local the Korean residents as such, or perhaps kind of from the married quarters or residents who live there permanently in Hong Kong, they used to pick people up who wished to go. They used to give us a lift in their cars and take us to the local golf club, and there they used to have some whatever, kind of some titbits and what have you and that, and then we could perhaps go swimming in the sea and that. So, and also whilst I was at the Cheerio Club, apart from being free and easy to wander around wherever you wanted during those few days, we decided to go to Portuguese colony of Macau, which was further round there, and used to go on this ferry boat, and we had to pay for ourselves, and as a passport we just used the army pay book for our passport, and there we actually stay. I think we only went there for a day, I can't remember now, but this was the very first time I'd ever tried Chinese food. Being kind of like a soldier sort, we always eaten kind of in the barracks as such, or actually into the kind of the things like the Nafi Club and that. So always remember having this Chinese food, and it was quite an experience going to Macau. And so really that more or less kind of finished off my I think it was about a 7-day leave in the Cheerio Club, and then it was back to Gun Club Barracks, and it was continuation of the training.
Now, when did you actually come to leave then? Was it July or was it, I'm not quite sure when you left.
We actually left Hong Kong around about the end of, I think it was end of October.
Oh, so much later, right.
Yeah. But before that, there were many things kind of happening. I do remember kind of the training, because as I mentioned perhaps earlier, the bulk of the people were regular soldiers. Now, these regular soldiers, they were kind of much older than ourselves sort of thing. I mean, we were the young national servicemen, the virgin soldiers, as you could say. But the regular soldiers, they seemed to be mixed up into two groups. One lot, they were what I call the womanizers, and the other lot, they were kind of the hardened drinkers. Now, in Hong Kong at that time, they used to, because lots of these young girls who were fleeing the system from China as such, I mean, they were poverty stricken, and so lots of these young girls actually went on the street sort of thing and things like that. So, and of course, in Hong Kong, there was this great problem then arose sort of thing about these sexual diseases. In Hong Kong, they used to have this huge big hospital for venereal disease. And I do remember kind of once we were called on parade sort of thing by the commanding officer, and we were all lined up and that, and he ranted and raved about kind of 4-2 battery was now what they call the syphilitic battery, and kind of where these actual people, you know, kind of where they caught this. And of course lots of people used to disappear, I'm talking about mostly the regular soldiers, and they went into this VD hospital for a period. Now, another thing I actually do remember about these regular soldiers, because they were very happy-go-lucky, there was quite a few of them from Southern Ireland, as I remember, very happy-go-lucky in that. And so just before we were due to go off to Korea, they just suddenly decided, because they got no leave forthcoming, they just suddenly decided to take off, and they just disappeared from barracks. They went what they call AWOL, absent without leave as such. And then eventually when they'd actually run out of money, they all kind of came back. And of course, they were all put on a charge, and they all got about 14 days detention. And of course, we were in this period of being continuous training, and so all these kind of, there, I think there are about 13 or 14 of them, they all got shoved into the so-called guard room of gun club barracks. And so every morning they used to pick them up with the what they call a regimental police. There used to be one in the front and one at the rear, and they used to march them off to the cookhouse with their mugs swinging and that, a big smiles on their faces, because they were just happy-go-lucky. They didn't care less. And so they used to kind of spend their time or nights actually in the guard room. But during the daytime, because we were going to Korea, they were all on the training.
So what happens? Anything else before you leave?
I can't really remember.
So late October, now which ship did you go on board? The whole of the 42 battery is going.
Yeah.
There was a drumhead service before you left. Perhaps that's the final.
Yes, they decided they'd have this big parade actually on the parade square. And so they had the band of the Royal Leicesters, which were actually based up in the New Territories. So they brought, the band came down, and then we had this big parade actually on the square. And I think there was I think the newspapers were there, because as photographs appeared in the newspaper. And then what they call a drumhead service, they had this big parade there. And then after that was actually after the parade had actually finished, we'd already packed all our equipment up, and I had to pack all the tire equipment up, which was separate, and so that was already go down to the docks.
Now, which ship were you going on?
And then on the next day, we actually marched from Gun Club Barracks to the Kowloon docks, and we went on this troop ship called the Empire Pride. Now, the Empire Pride, it was one of the older ships. They used to have hammocks, and they used to have all these for messing, for the food. They used to have these big bench tables with bench seats and things like that, and you used to have to collect the food from down the galley in these buckets and things like that. So we boarded the Empire Pride, and I think there was kind of other units, I think it was the latter units of the 14th Field, which were part of them, had actually gone, and then there was 120 Battery and 42 Battery. And so we actually went on the troop ship, and then we was actually played off by the band of the Argyll Island Southern and Highlanders, who had actually been in Korea previous 12 months, and they came back, and they'd actually changed units with one of the infantry units actually up in the New Territories. So the Argyll's pipe band, they actually played us off as we left Hong Kong, Hong Kong Harbour as such. And what I actually remember after that, we actually sailed out there, and we sailed around, and I always remember seeing the white pagoda on the Hong Kong Island sort of thing, which we'd visited previously and things like that. And then we just sailed out into the China Sea as such.
What was the trip like? It was a bit primitive from the sound of it.
Well, the actual ship was not the same type of a ship as the Empire Ferry, which had standees, and it had a proper cafeteria systems and things like that. And like I say, that the China Sea, because it was now getting, it was the end of October, coming up to November, and of course it was becoming up the autumn or the winter period, and the sea became very green and choppy, as I remember it. And of course the Empire Pride, it had the toilets. You could never find these kind of toilets. They were dotted around somewhere. And also the engine of the Empire Pride, all you could hear continuously all through day and night was this thump 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 of this kind of engine. And so that's when we set off, and so it went on there. I think it took 2 or 3 days. I'm not sure. We passed somewhere near Philippines, and then we went up, and then eventually we actually came up to Busan. And I do remember before we actually landed that as we it was in the middle of the night, and of course, like I said, the toilets are so few and far between that we used to have hammocks on the Empire Pride. And like I say, that I never really come to terms with these hammocks, and they used to, you were not allowed to put these hammocks up until a certain time, perhaps in the late afternoon or evening. And all these hammocks, they were tied up all directions and that, and I used to tie them up to, because it was one big mass of ceiling pipes, I used to tie mine up to these pipes, and I used to put a blanket on top, what I remember, and then I used to kind of raise myself actually onto these ceiling pipes and hopefully lower myself actually on the thing on there, and of course then put a blanket over the top. And then of course during the night, if you ever wanted to go to the loo sort of thing, it, most people used to find it easy to go on the top deck sort of thing and do it over the side and that. And this is what I actually, my first sighting of Korea, we was moored just outside, the engines had actually stopped. And when I actually went on